know the why human trafficking work is needed. To fight for the freedom of modern-day slaves. But love, passion, commitment isn't all you need to be an effective and successful anti-trafficking advocate. Learn the how. I'm Dr. Celia Williamson, Director of the Human Trafficking and Social Justice Institute at the University of Toledo. Welcome to the Emancipation Nation podcast, where I'll provide you with the latest and best methods, policy, and practice discussed by experienced experts in the field so that you can cut through the noise, save time, and be about the work of saving lives. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. This week, I have my co-host again, Lisa Belton. So what's going on, Lisa?
Not a whole lot. I'm excited to be back and really excited for everyone to get to hear this week's interview. It was really good. But before we dive into that, do you want to tell our listeners what's been going on in the Institute recently? I think they'd be pretty interested at the exciting developments.
Yeah, so we have the Human Trafficking and Social Justice Institute at the university where I work. And we have been toiling away, trying to develop a response to runaways, because we know through our research that being a runaway is the number one risk factor for kids who are trafficked into the sex trade. And that was one of the things that we weren't really attending to or doing anything about. And so really, when kids run away, nobody is really actively out there looking for them. And so we developed this program called Focus on Runaways. And FOCUS is actually an acronym for finding youth. And I don't remember all the letters of the acronym, but the point is to collaborate with the sheriff's department and actually get a weekly list of the kids who ran away and go and find the kids and then assess the kids for trafficking or risk of trafficking and then connect them to immediate services and then long-term services. We got that project funded. We were working for months, and I think this is the sixth month. And my coordinator, Amy Legesse, texted me yesterday and said the process actually worked. And it's like we had been doing a lot of meeting and a lot of training and a lot of coordinating. And finally, there was an incident where a young person was identified. This girl had been trafficked and she has been connected to services. So we're so excited. I mean, we have services in our community that identify young people and connect them, but not specifically runaways. So I'm pretty excited that that has happened. And I think now we are on our way to, you know, knocking down that other domino, which is getting a good, effective response to that risk factor.
Well, it's some really exciting news. Mm-hmm. And but we also had sort of an exciting experience.
We did.
Want to share what we found. And
yes. So, you know, you all out there might know this, but Steinmart is going out of business. And so we like to take long walks, and we were walking by and we saw that big yellow sign going out of business. And then what did we do?
We threw caution to the wind and entered the Steinmart prepared to do battle.
Yes.
And we ended up leaving with about, well, exactly 20 pairs of shoes.
Yes.
And by that time, as Celia mentioned, we had walked up there. And by that time, a thunderstorm had moved in on us, pouring rain. And here we are with 20 shoe boxes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. About four bags and large bags. And we didn't know what to do. I think we got caught up in the high of getting shoes that were $5 to $10 each. So we ended up having to call for a ride, but it didn't matter because we were so tickled and excited. How many shoes did you end up with?
I ended up with 8 from the day we bought 20, and the day we returned, I got 3 more.
Yeah, I think I ended up with about 7. And then we have some other ones for Christmas gifts. So I think, it was a good week. So, and This week, we're going to be talking to teens and getting their perspective. These are actually young artists, young poets, and I think they bring it to us real and raw, and I'm very excited. I interview them, and they read their poem, and then I talk to them about their poem and why they wrote it the way that they wrote and the contents and kind of what they want to do with their future. And most importantly, the messages that they have for us, the adults and the anti-trafficking advocates. So we're going to start that interview, and then Lisa and I are going to come back on the back end and discuss it. I'm happy to have Hanan Shah here and Angelina Sanders. They are both young people. How old are you all?
I'm 17.
And Hanan?
I'm also 17.
How did you guys get involved in the anti-trafficking movement, sort of through a creative outlet?
Well, for me, I study creative writing at my school, and our creative writing instructor, he's always pushing out like contests for us to join and stuff for us to do. And I saw this one and I thought it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote up my piece for it. And I was surprised, not everyone in my class didn't really like know what to say about it, because it's a very uncomfortable topic for a lot of kids our age. But I had a lot to write, and I did.
And so your teacher put out this announcement. Is that what happened to you, Hanan?
No. So Omar Sakur, who helps with the poetry slam, it was actually my youth director for my local youth group at my mosque. And so he was promoting the poetry slam and the art competition that was a part of the conference. Mm-hmm. And he always knew that I really liked writing. I'm on the speech and debate team. So that's something that I just really enjoy. And he also knew that, you know, I'd like to contribute in any way I can to work like this. So that's how I got into it.
So through Omar, and Omar, we've been working with Omar. And how do you say his last name again?
Sakur.
Okay. I will probably never be able to say that. But Omar is just a whiz. He's very creative. He's smart. He's extremely compassionate. And he really came to us because we had our human trafficking conference, our high school day. And he came to us and ever so politely told us that our conference was very boring for teenagers. And so, which I love to hear, because I love refreshing honesty. And I swear to God, he was so very nice and polite about it.
He is.
But I thought, yeah, that must be pretty boring to sit there and listen, even though the content may be interesting. But young people, you know, there are different ways to get them to receive messages. And so he said, what about if we had a poetry slam and if we had an art competition? And so I know he reached out to you directly, Hanan, and he must have reached out to some of the schools, schools for the arts and those types of things. And that must be how you got involved, Angelina. So tell me a little bit about your piece, Hanan. What's the title of it and what's it about?
So the title of my piece is Price Tag, and it's honestly a little bit more broad of a commentary, I'd say. Mm-hmm. I decided, so last year when I took part in the poetry slam, I kind of focused it more on human trafficking and, you know, what that means and the implications of it. But with this piece, I wanted to kind of talk about something I notice about society in general. Mm-hmm. So I comment on the degradation and the devaluing of human beings that has taken part, that has taken place in our society. And mm-hmm. it was honestly inspired by, so I was lucky enough to attend this talk given by Teresa Flores of the SOAP Project. Mm-hmm. And she talked about how the demand for human trafficking is something that we can target. And that demand comes from, you know, different places. There is labor trafficking, there is sex trafficking. And so when she talked about demand, I was really inspired to write about that and what demand really means and where that demand is coming from. And so I talk about how things like racism and sexism and the hypersexualization of women and children, you know, lends itself to the industry. And then human trafficking itself also lends itself to fuel those problems. So it's this big cycle. And then, you know, earlier this year with the Black Lives Matter movement, I saw a lot of prioritizing capital over human beings. And that then kind of informed my choice to write this and the way I wrote this. So I know this sounds very like vague and very, very general right now, but
it sounds very, very deep. I mean, I'm really just in awe and just impressed with your conversation. And I think it's very much also like our battle right now in the moment between, you know, the economy and opening that, making money and people's right. lives. And right. to me, of course, it's a hands down. I mean, I don't see a comparison, but a lot of people have a very legitimate comparison. So, yeah. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So what about you, Angelina? What inspired you? What's the title of your project and what inspired you to write about it?
My piece is called Age Gap. Mine's kind of inspired about growing up in Toledo almost. Mm-hmm. I grew up very poor. And in these neighborhoods, I had my friends and a lot of my friends were in high school and they were girls who were 14, 15, with boyfriends who were like 26, 28. And I remember thinking, that's really weird, but it's so common. And I didn't realize how common it was until I got into high school, where there are girls in my grade who have boyfriends who are 21, 22 when we were sophomores. I'm like, wow, you're really out there. Mm-hmm. And I never realized how harmful it was until we started talking about it more when I got to my junior year. And I talked about it with my mom. And growing up, my mom worked in retail and she would tell me stories of these younger girls coming with older men. And they would point out all the things they wanted. And they would tell them, if you make your keep tonight, we'll come back and you can get a reward. Saying if these girls made enough money with their bodies, they would be able to come back and get something they liked at Lady Foot Locker. And that always stuck with me. And that always made sure that I was careful with who I hung around and who I was with. And I guess I wanted to write a piece for those girls that I was friends with growing up, the girls who babysat me, the girls who lived in my neighborhood, and girls who just live in Toledo who have the same story that's just not talked about.
Mm-hmm. That's very deep, too. I want you to be able to share your poem and then we're going to talk about it on the back end. So Hanan, will you read your poem and then we'll discuss it?
So the title of my piece is Price Tag. We demand our possessions be of value, that the shoes on our feet and the bags we carry, the food we consume are of quality. But do we ever stop to wonder where they came from? Do we ever stop to picture the hands that shaped them? And do we ever stop to envision the backs we pluck off of? We demand our possessions be of value. But do we bat an eye at that advertisement, that catcall, that racial slur, that nickname, and the joke that complements it? Microaggressions that tip the balance of power to let someone down. We demand our possessions be of value, but do we do the same for our neighbors, our friends, most importantly, our strangers? Because see, it's like our hands are full, but our hearts are empty. It's a shared paradoxical mindset that we want the fast, cheap, efficient, entertaining, and yet perfect at the expense of human life. We tell ourselves we wouldn't be able to stomach the enslavement of humans, but we tighten their shackles with blindfolds on, we forget that at the expense of our demands is a person. So when did we decide that we would rather turn a blind eye than to rise up and put up a fight to choose to see what is easy may be easy and what may be difficult is actually right? If you feel defensive, accused, and confused, you may think the demand isn't coming from you, but it's a demand we create. And if not create, we tolerate. The demand for cheap sex, for cheap labor, for cheap laughs, for cheap quality, it's the demand we partake in that must be dismantled. Demand embedded in how we consume, how we choose, how we use, how we view humans and their value. So why don't we demand justice? Why don't we demand equality? Why don't we demand worth like we demand what is easy? Like we demand silence on what disturbs us. And maybe we aren't the perpetrators who need to be caught. And maybe we aren't the problem that needs to be fought. But the demand is. And for every minute of action lost, all that is improving is the cost. The transactions of enslavement may not be in our line of sight, but are we not guilty of putting on human beings a price?
That is profound. And what I love about it is I think that you ever so eloquently convict us and hold us accountable and ask us the difficult questions. I think the adults in the world want to point their fingers at the traffickers, but you're pointing your finger at us, right, in a sense, and asking us about the things we demand. Are they the right things? Are they the appropriate things? Why do you think we don't demand the things that we should be demanding in terms of human life and dignity and value of another person?
You know, that's a really, really tough question. I think that we'd like to all say, think that we're, you know, good people, that we would help somebody if they needed it when it came down to it. But I think that there's a lot of different factors at play. I think that depending on where you live and maybe the country you live in, the society that you live in, we're not always community oriented, or we don't always care about what doesn't affect us directly. We're very individualized at times, very, you know, focused on our own survival and our own, I guess, welfare and well-being. And while that isn't necessarily inherently bad, I think that over time, we can sometimes use that to excuse our own, I guess, ignorance or our own, like I said, just putting aside other people's suffering or other people's needs in the name of, you know, I have my own things that I need to worry about, or this isn't like my priority. So I think those demands and the lack of demands that we make for other people stem from that, I think that warped individualization that's happened. Mm-hmm. We kind of at times lack the community-driven passion or the community-driven concern.
Yeah, and I had a guest on, Dr. Austin Choi Fitzpatrick, some episodes back, and he talked about it not really costing us anything when we say, oh yeah, give the trafficker 10 more years in prison, 30 years in prison. We give life in prison. I think that's good. And I demand that he get life in prison or whatever, because it doesn't in real time affect us or cause an investment from us or any loss from us. So we love that jump on that criminal justice bandwagon. Feels good. But the things that will cost us is like paying attention to what we buy.
Yeah.
Because maybe there's a slave behind that, but we don't care. We want to get the better deal.
Exactly.
Or, you know, being invested in the suffering of other people in a real and meaningful way. We don't want to do that because that's painful. It's stressful. And it takes a heavy lift to, you know, create this equity, I think, across people. It's better to just ignore it. It's better to just write a check. It's better to just give time in jail. It's better to focus on that quality handbag I want and brag about the family that I raised perfectly. Of course, it's never perfectly, but we go out and tell everybody our family is perfect and put my energies there, because doesn't cost me.
Right. And I think you brought up a really good point about how some of when we do kind of like demand justice, quote unquote, it can be very just immediate things, like you said, very instant, just like arresting somebody or just the quick things that are easy to advocate for. But in terms of long term, like lasting impact, we do have to look at those underlying issues. So, yeah, that was a really good point.
So what will you do, Hanan, when you graduate? What's the future have in store for you?
Oh, boy. So I hope to study political science or anthropology, just because I think they're both similar in the sense that they study human interaction, organization. And, you know, if all goes well, I do want to, if I don't pursue anthropology, further, I would want to pursue a law degree and become an immigration lawyer. That'd be really cool. But in terms of like the near future where I'm studying, if I'm staying in Ohio, Ohio State, there are some really cool programs in California that would allow me to study abroad. Mm-hmm. But I definitely want to stick with like the social sciences. I'm not a STEM person. So, I'm very interested in, like I said earlier, human interaction, development, history. So
that is amazing. Yeah, no doubt you will get into the school of your choice.
Thank you. Don't doubt that. I hope so.
So, Angelina, can you read your poem and then we're going to discuss that on the back end?
Yeah. My poem is called Age Gap. Purple bags sag under the eyes. Her veins begin to peek out under the surface. From afar, she was just tired. A distant student from her peers with a tendency to skip school and slowly decreasing her efforts. No longer raising her hand to answer a question, with a false hope that maybe she'll get it right. Walking around with a smile, lacking confidence which used to falsely leak into her words. Eyes stay focused on the desk below. Answers become a monotone mechanic machine. She sits vacant with little ability to smile. Considered by her former friends, just another teen apart from a crowd, her name many can find in the list of the 50 most common baby names, allowing itself to be circled until the page is stained with blue ink. Her faces begin to blend in yearbooks over hundreds of thousands of schools, where to all they just look identical. You can see her name written on the sidewalks of low-income neighborhoods, house circled on the map of her predator who claims the face of her 24-year-old boyfriend. His car can be seen dropping her off at school, picking her up early, or meeting her outside of a Sunco gas station. Maybe even rewarding her at the mall, letting her pick her prize from her night's work. His name plastered permanently across her skin. Above it scarred by cigarette burns, bruises left by one-night stand rapists, she morphs into her mind as a job. Maybe even lovers. Any way her adolescent mind can justify this abnormal behavior.
Wow, so you talk straight about sex trafficking. How did you get such a insider's knowledge about this experience? You talked about your neighborhood and some of your friends and growing up, but you really talk about the self-esteem, I think, and the self-confidence. Do you think that that is something that all girls experience to some level, like lower self-esteem, or do you think it's some girls that experience low self-esteem? What are your thoughts?
I think, especially now in 2020, with social media and such high standards placed on girls, I feel like we all experience some form of low self-esteem. Even if we don't show it, even if we don't want to talk about it within ourselves, we all see that post on Instagram, or we all see that picture in a magazine. And we're all like, wow, I wished I looked like her. Or we all have that friend who does really well in school. And we're like, wow, I wish I was as smart as her. And we do let it affect us because as girls nowadays, we're supposed to like push ourselves so far because we're fighting for equality still in 2020. Yet anything that sets us back, it's seen as a way to degrade us and put us down. We always have to be careful with how we talk to others and how we dress because we want to be treated equally, yet anything we do to step out of line is just a way for them to tell us, no, we don't need equality. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And in what ways do you think, like, society tells women and girls, no, you can't have equality?
What comes to mind for me is our appearance and how we dress. For me personally, I love to wear skirts. I love to dress very feminine. And I've always been told that if I'm going to keep dressing this way, some guy is going to approach me and he is going to have his way with me because I'm dressing this way and it's inviting him in. I never have heard that said to my male friends or my brother. It's always directed at girls. Especially even today in science classes, we're put down in such little ways like, wow, you did that good. That's surprising. And it's hard for women to get into math programs and science programs because there's always those little backhanded compliments, those passive aggressive marks that are always directed our way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember a filmmaker wanted me to appear in one of his documentaries and ended up saying to me afterward that I was very articulate. And I thought, well, I have a PhD. I mean, shouldn't I be articulate? You know, so that wasn't really a compliment to me that I have the ability to be articulate. Like, really, would you ever have said that to a male PhD? I think not. So, I think every day and in little ways, microaggressions that tell you that you always have to watch what you look like, what you say, where you go, what time of day it is, who's around. All those things are critically important to your character because people will assign negative aspects of your character to you based on all of those types of things, which probably don't identify who you are a whole lot. It just identifies what you want to look like and where you want to go and who you want to talk to. But it gets assigned to your character. What do you think, either of you, that we should be doing? Because if we could help improve the plight of women, I think we can help improve human trafficking. I'm talking about human rights more than rescuing one victim at a time. So what do you think? Because, you know, us adults, we didn't get it right.
For me, when I think about it, I think that there are two things, kind of two sides to this. There are more individual localized efforts. I think it's important to get involved in your community and, you know, support efforts that will support the people in your community. So people who are at risk or vulnerable or have survived human trafficking or any other kinds of injustice, really. And then there's also being bold and brave enough to maybe support larger efforts. So yeah, I'm thinking about the changes that we've seen in history, you know, the civil rights movement or with women's rights, even those didn't come from, you know, I think the small efforts did add up, but I think also there needed to be, you need to organize, you know, protesting and really trying to influence policy. So there are larger efforts and there's localized efforts. And I think both need to be done. Then you also need to be brave enough to step up to that. Because even we were talking about this earlier, how it's easy to demand the immediate change or the things that don't require too much commitment. But, you know, when it comes to actually making a change and however women are regarded in society, how we work, how we live, how we choose to have families, how we choose to, you know, take care of ourselves and live our lives, that's going to come from a lot of deeper underlying things that we've inherited from kind of history, really. So that'll take a lot more than just localized efforts to undo. But that being said, both are needed.
Mm-hmm. Good. What do you think, Angelina?
Honestly, I think something that we can start small with doing is educating people. A lot of people are extremely ignorant when it comes to this. A lot of people think trafficking in general is just people being shipped off and something that we don't see on a day-to-day basis. And I feel like we should have people be aware of this, educate them in schools, outside of schools. And we need to start talking about this without this mask over it, without this curtain over it. This is one of those subjects that people like to lightly talk about. They don't want to get into detail because it makes them uncomfortable. And I feel like we need to make people uncomfortable. We need to have them be educated and have them know what is happening in the world.
What will you do, Angelina, after high school?
I want to be a teacher, actually. I want to teach middle school. I struggled a lot in middle school, and I feel like what I learned, I want to help the youth learn as well. And I want to teach English because I love to read, and I am also not good at STEM stuff. So,
and so where do you want to, do you want to stay in Ohio, or where would you love to be?
I think I'll stay in Ohio. I've always wanted to go around. I wanted to travel around the United States. I've never really been outside of Ohio a lot. Mm-hmm. Toledo's kind of been like my main area, but for the longest time, I wanted to move up to Michigan because I love the cold, and going northern, farther up Michigan, the colder it gets. And I'd really just like to have a nice life. I'd like to settle down. I'd like to become a teacher, and I'd like to educate the youth.
That's cool. What do you all think is the best way for anti-trafficking advocates to get young people, teens, involved in the anti-trafficking fight? Like, what advice would you give us?
As weird as it's going to sound, or as odd as it will be, I think social media is probably a really good outlet, because I'm pretty sure almost everyone in my grade has an Instagram account. Mm-hmm. And I feel like most kids have social media accounts. And getting them involved in that way would be a good way for them to see the problems in it and do further research into it. I think we learned this with the Black Lives Matter movement. I learned about everything. I saw things through Instagram. With that, I did my own research, and that's how I got involved with it. And I think social media nowadays is just becoming a stepping stone for people to get involved. Like, some of my teachers have Twitter accounts where they tell us about our classes. I mean, like, it's the world we live in nowadays, and it's bananas, but that's how people communicate.
And Angelina, what's the worst way that we think that we're getting young people involved and it really is not working well? Like, what would be the worst thing to do?
Assemblies. Because like assemblies with like just a presentation, because a lot of kids just don't pay attention to that. They need something that'll get them involved and activated with them. With assemblies, something like that, people need to go up and talk. People need to be showing things. Kids don't work well with just PowerPoints mm-hmm. and like just straight facts. They need to be engaged.
That's good. Very powerful, because that's a lot of the way that we do it is through PowerPoints and assemblies. So that's great advice. What about you, Hanan?
I completely agree with Angelina on social media. I think that's a very, very powerful tool. And just kind of going off of what you said earlier, Angelina, about education, just the power of educating the youth and spreading information, because that's really how you plant the seed and how you kickstart change. Mm-hmm. With that, though, I think that the worst way can also be done through media. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like a tricky thing, you know. I definitely think that with social media and with informational publications or anything, it does need to be kind of easily digestible and kind of eye-catching, unfortunately. But I think also it should be not oversimplified, and just something that people can, that will inspire people to keep reading. So, you know, for instance, if you see like a thread, if you see a thread on Instagram, that can be really helpful. I mean, I know a lot of my friends who will send me a thread of things on Twitter or a thread of things on Instagram and be like, oh, look at this. Like, I had no idea. And that'll inspire me to keep reading or fact check. So definitely kind of what Angelina was saying. And then also what is being done here in Toledo, involving the youth in creative ways to get involved and contribute to efforts, because that gives them a sense of kind of ownership and control over the change they make. Mm-hmm. It's not just like us, you know, taking part in somebody else's work. It's like, we're also, this is also our work. And I see that in a lot of larger movements that have involved the youth and teens, is they end up organizing themselves, or they end up taking ownership and authority. And that's important, kind of cultivating that sense of ownership and service.
I love it. So any parting words for our audience? You know, they have been working very hard, you know, a lot of them every single day, trying to end human trafficking. So anything that you'd like to share with them in terms of who you are, what they should be doing, or any words that you'd like to share with them?
I would say it's really important to hold on to getting educated, one, and staying compassionate, and then taking action. So like those three things, I think education, compassion, and action. Because, you know, when you're informed, you know, that's good, but then that's not enough. And I think you also need that compassion and that empathy to not become desensitized and to actually have like sincerity with your work. And then the action is to actually do something about what you've learned and what you feel. So those three things, if there's anything I can take away from today, honestly. And then another thing that I've learned is that creativity is always accessible. I heard that, I forgot, there was a presenter at some camp I went to, but she said creativity is always accessible. And I hold on to that, because sometimes the work you do doesn't always seem impactful or any different from what everybody else is doing. But when in doubt, know that like you always have access to yourself and what you can do and ways to push yourself and think outside the box.
That's awesome. Angelina?
Don't forget what you are doing and why you are doing it, and don't lose hope for the world, and always keep a positive outlook. The world today is crazy. I mean, just in general, with COVID happening, with the state of America, I think we can all just like have this negative outlook on the world. And I think we need to start thinking more positively and focus on our main goals of what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Good. So keep the positive focus on. I love that as well. So thank you both. And that one day you live in a world where you don't have to worry about how you dress, and you don't have to worry about, you know, so much about where you go and always watching and the company you keep and always being on guard as women. And I hope that we put the demands that we want or say we want in the right perspective, so that we start making a world that we can then leave to you that is a world that's worth inheriting. So thank you all. I appreciate your time.
Wow, that was so powerful and inspiring. And wow, if we leave the world to young people like that, I feel very safe and confident.
Absolutely. I felt like these girls did not come to play.
Yes.
They were speaking truth. Yes. What really struck me was that you were really asking them some tough questions.
I did. I didn't softball the questions, because I felt like they could handle it. And I felt that, you know, they were going to speak truth to the nation. And I'm so glad that I did ask the tough questions, because I think we got very deep and thoughtful responses.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought it made the interview really, really of quality.
Yeah, yeah. They were also kind of the yin and the yang of each other. You know, one really talked about the classroom and what happens with young girls and their invisibility and their inferiorities and their vulnerabilities, while Hanan talked about global concepts as well, like, you know, the demand, how we demand our material items be of quality, but not how we treat people in the world and not about equity. So I like that sort of a internal, external thing, a yin and a yang, sort of a micro and a macro kind of approach. And that was really by accident. I didn't really think about that until I heard both poems you know, just now.
Yeah, and I thought, well, what I found interesting was when you asked what they would like to be, mm-hmm. you know, in their professional lives, and Angelina said she wanted to teach, and Hanan said a lawyer or an anthropologist.
Yeah, I had no doubt that they'll get into the school of their choice. Did you actually have a favorite part or anything?
I thought it was really powerful when they asked why do we as a society prioritize capital over human beings? And I believe what was said is why our hands are full, but our hearts are empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was deep. I think it reminds me of, you know, as a clinical social worker, and you have a family come in, and the family can just have all kinds of defense mechanisms and coping strategies. And, you know, when that happens, a lot of times you just ask the kid, you're like, what's going on with this family? And the child will tell you the truth. Because children often speak truth. And so when they came in and they were reading their poems, it was like, they're speaking truth to us. And they're really, like I said, convicting us in terms of helping us to take those blinders off, to take those defense mechanisms and coping mechanisms, you know, out of our reality and just look at what it is through their eyes and their perspective. I think we need to do, you know, more of that, not less of that.
I would agree with that from the mouths of babes.
Yeah.
And was that your favorite part?
That, I mean, the overall was my favorite. I think my favorite part was just the courage overall for young people to have a voice like that. I, you know, at 17, I didn't have a voice like that. And I love the courage that both of them brought to the table. So I like it all, but it encompasses like a courage and a bravery that I really respect. You know, one of the things that I thought really struck me was when they talked about how to communicate best with young people, because one of the things they said was don't use assembly and PowerPoint and, in essence, lecture. And that's, I think, a lot of times what we do.
Absolutely. And reminded me I kind of agree. I don't know that I've really learned best mm-hmm. just being mm-hmm. lectured to, you know, I think I learned best having different approaches, especially visually. And, mm-hmm. and I appreciate that we're kind of brought up social media as a really important tool in, mm-hmm. in educating folks, communicating with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have been beaten into submission. So I can sit in a classroom and I can stare at you and I know how to play the game as if I'm paying attention, but I might be thinking about when I'm going to get the mall or whatever. And just another level of honesty. It's like, no, bring it to us in a way that stimulates us visually, where we can receive the information. And even when I get on social media today, it's way more entertaining and I learn a lot and time flies by and I don't even realize that I just learned something very valuable because, you know, they brought it to me in such a creative way. And I think young people are telling us, I'm sorry, we're going to have to be a little more creative if we want to, you know, move the knowledge base forward and we want to have young people join us. Because I think the secret message communicated to most young people today by the society around them is that they aren't needed, that the society will run itself quietly and nicely until they, at some distant point in their future, will take over the reins. And that was said by Alvin Toffler. Yet the fact is that the society is not running itself nicely because the rest of us need all the energy, the brains, imagination, and talent that we can get to solve our problems. For society to attempt to solve its desperate problems without the full participation of every young person in our society is a detriment to ourselves. Want to believe in something again? Talk to some young people. Want to hear truth? talk to young people, want creative and perhaps effective answers, particularly about the things that affect them most, involve young people. Do you have young people involved in the planning and execution of your project? If not, get them involved. You will find that they inspire, they bring value, and they bring truth.
I agree. Great episode.
Let's not just do something, let's do the best thing. If you like this episode of Emancipation Nation, please subscribe and I'll send you the weekly podcast. Until then, the fight continues.